Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. New York, this is Democracy Now!
It's time to end the failed experiment of open borders. You have to end it now. See, I can tell you, I'm really good at this stuff. Your countries are going to hell.
President Trump criticizes the United Nations and other countries in his address at the opening of the UN General Assembly here in New York. We'll speak to Washington Post columnist Ishan Tharoor, who was in the audience. His recent piece headlined, "A Trump-shaped wrecking ball swings toward a faltering United Nations." Then President Trump makes false and misleading claims about vaccines, autism, and Tylenol.
I want to say it like it is. Don't take Tylenol. Don't take it if you just can't. I mean, it's fight like hell not to take it.
We'll speak with vaccine expert Dr. Peter Hotez about Trump's war on science. Then President Trump's new domestic terrorism designation for Antifa. We'll talk to investigative journalist Will Potter.
The designation of Antifa as a terrorist organization represents the gloves coming off and political repression and attacks on dissent right now. This is really a warning to all social movements about what's coming.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Speaking at the opening of the UN General Assembly, President Trump blasted the United Nations and questioned its purpose. He also called climate change a con job and warned European nations of the, quote, double-tailed monster of migration and green energy.
Not only is the UN not solving the problems it should too often, it's actually creating new problems for us to solve. The best example is the number one political issue of our time, the crisis of uncontrolled migration. It's uncontrolled. Your countries are being ruined. The United Nations is funding an assault on Western countries and their borders.
Outside the United Nations, protesters gathered urging an end to Israel's war on Gaza. This comes as 10 more countries recognize Palestinian statehood, bringing the total to more than 150 countries.
I would say that recognizing Palestinian state right now without actually taking real action to stop the ongoing genocide of the Palestinian people is just symbolic. It's hypocritical. It means nothing.
Israel is intensifying its bombardment of Gaza City, pushing its military forces to the heart of the city after ordering more than 1 million residents to flee. Israeli attacks have killed more than 50 people in Gaza today alone. Here's a Mohammed, a displaced Palestinian mother of two.
We were determined to stay in our neighborhood, in Sabra, and not leave. But the situation we saw was extremely dangerous and difficult. These robots that came to our area made us leave without realizing it.
The Gaza-bound Global Samud Flotilla is reporting that explosions, multiple drones, and chemical devices have targeted their boats near Greece. The group says it's the seventh attack on the flotilla. In response, Italy sent a Navy ship to protect the boats. The Global Samud Flotilla is preparing to leave soon to Gaza in an attempt to break the Israeli blockade. Passengers include the Swedish activist Greta Thunberg and Nelson Mandela's grandson, the South African MP Mandla Mandela. Here's another of the activists aboard the flotilla.
We have been attacked by 8 drones. 8 attacks so far. 7 of them has hit the boat. One of them, it was like a chemical substance. The other 6 were explosions above the boat. Some of them created structural damage on the boat. No one has been hurt so far.
The UN Commission of Inquiry on the Occupied Palestinian Territory says Israel's looking to establish permanent control of Gaza and establish a Jewish majority in the occupied West Bank. The report's set to be presented next month to the UN General Assembly. In a statement, Navi Pillay, the head of the commission, said Israeli actions had, quote, deepened the misery of the Palestinian people and deprived them of resources indispensable for their survival, including the capacity to produce food, unquote. President Trump has said Ukraine, backed by the European Union and NATO, could win back territory captured by Russia's full-scale invasion. Trump's comments Tuesday marked a dramatic shift in his position on Russia's war on Ukraine. Following a meeting with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky on the sidelines of the UN General Assembly yesterday, Trump wrote on Truth Social, quote, "With time, patience, and financial support of Europe, and in particular NATO, the original borders from where this war started is very much an option." Trump had previously said both Ukraine and Russia would have to cede land to end the war. Trump also signaled support for NATO attacks on Russian aircraft that enter the airspace of member countries. Syrian interim president Ahmed al-Sharaa sat for an interview with former CIA director David Petraeus in New York yesterday. Petraeus had commanded U.S. forces during the invasion of Iraq and imprisoned al-Sharaa from 2006 to 2011. Al-Sharaa had a $10 million bounty placed on his head by the U.S. as leader of the Syrian militant group Hayat Tahrir al-Sham. The bounty was lifted last December. Here's General Petraeus speaking with President al-Sharaa yesterday.
We thank you for sharing your vision today. We wish you strength and wisdom in the difficult work ahead. We obviously hope for your success, inshallah, because at the end of the day, your success is our success.
The European Union and the World Health Organization are disputing President Trump's warning linking acetaminophen during pregnancy with autism. In a statement, the European Medicines Agency said, quote, "Available evidence has found no link between the use of paracetamol, another name for acetaminophen, during pregnancy and autism." Here's Justine Roberts, founder of the London-based parenting forum Mumsnet.
I think it's really important that you follow the evidence and the science. And I think most people on Mumsnet are aware that Trump says a lot of stuff which is not to be trusted. So I think it's very important that the government comes out now.
An emotional Jimmy Kimmel returned to the airwaves last night after ABC indefinitely suspended his show last week following Federal Communications Commission Chair Brendan Carr's threats to revoke the broadcast licenses of affiliates over comments Kimmel made about Charlie Kirk's assassin. In his monologue, Jimmy Kimmel spoke about how foreign comedians look to the United States.
They know how lucky we are here. Our freedom to speak is what they admire most about this country. And that's something I'm embarrassed to say I took for granted until they pulled my friend Steven off the air and tried to coerce the affiliates who run our show in the cities that you live in to take my show off the air. That's not legal. That's not American. That is un-American. And it's so dangerous.
President Trump suggested he might sue ABC after Kimmel returned to the airwaves, saying, quote, "We're going to test ABC out on this," unquote. It comes after ABC settled a civil defamation suit with Trump for $16 million last year. Meanwhile, Senators Elizabeth Warren, Ron Wyden, Ed Markey, and Chris Van Hollen have announced an investigation into Nexstar and Sinclair, major TV station owners that account for roughly 70 ABC affiliates across the U.S., who are refusing to air Jimmy Kimmel live. In a letter addressed to the leadership of Nexstar and Sinclair, the senators write, quote, "If you suspended a late-night comedian show in part to seek regulatory favors from the administration, you've not only assisted the administration eroding First Amendment freedoms, but also create the appearance of a possible quid pro quo arrangement that could implicate federal anti-corruption laws," unquote. Nexstar is currently seeking FCC approval for its $6.2 billion merger with Tegna, while Sinclair is also exploring a possible merger for its broadcast business. In Haiti, at least 11 people, most of them children, were killed after a drone attack struck a birthday party in Port-au-Prince Saturday. The attack supposedly targeted gang leaders. Experts have denounced the strikes as a violation of international law, blaming Haiti's interim government, which earlier this year hired foreign military contractors to conduct lethal operations against gangs who've seized Port-au-Prince and vast swaths of territory across Haiti. The contractors work for a company owned by Trump ally Eric Prince, also the founder of Blackwater. A group of 11 people deported from the United States to Ghana have all been returned to their home countries despite fearing torture and persecution. The nationals from Nigeria, Togo, Mali, Gambia, and Liberia had previously sued the Ghanaian government to fight their removal and said their deportation from Ghana was expedited without access to lawyers or due process. The Trump administration has third country agreements with several nations, including Ghana, which agreed to accept U.S. deportees of different nationalities as part of Trump's crackdown on immigrants. The Trump administration's issued fresh sanctions as the U.S. intensifies punitive measures in response to Brazil's criminal prosecution of former far-right President Jair Bolsonaro. Earlier this month, Brazil's Supreme Court sentenced Bolsonaro to more than 27 years in prison for plotting a military coup after his election defeat in 2022. Trump officials have moved to sanction the wife of the Brazilian Supreme Court Justice, Alexandra de Moraes, who led the probe into Bolsonaro, a Trump ally. The coup plot included assassinating current president Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva. Lula took aim at Trump in his UN General Assembly speech, which opened UNGA yesterday.
There is no justification for unilateral and arbitrary measures against our institutions and our economy. The attack on independence of the judiciary is unacceptable. This interference in internal affairs is aided by a subservient far right that longs for former hegemony.
Lula's opening address opened the UN General Assembly. He was followed by President Trump. A jury in Florida yesterday found Ryan Roth guilty of attempting to assassinate President Trump last year on a golf course. As the jury left, Roth started stabbing himself in the neck with a pen. He faces life in prison when he is sentenced. House Democrats have launched a series of probes against Trump's so-called border czar, Tom Homan, amidst revelations he was recorded last year accepting a bag with $50,000 in cash from a pair of FBI agents who were posing as business executives. In exchange for the money, Homan reportedly offered to help them secure future government contracts. Maryland Congressmember Jamie Raskin, the top Democrat on the House Judiciary Committee, is urging the Justice Department to turn over the reported tape after a bribery probe was recently shut down by Trump's DOJ. The Department of Agriculture has placed a team of hunger researchers on leave. This came just days after the Trump administration said it would end a longstanding annual food insecurity report, which officials described as, quote, redundant, costly, politicized, and extraneous, unquote. The annual report helped shape policy on how to combat hunger in the United States. And Democrat Adelita Grijalva has won a special election in Arizona's 7th congressional district. She'll replace her late father, former Representative Raul Grijalva, in Congress. After she's sworn in, Grijalva is expected to become the 218th vote needed to force the Justice Department to release more of its files on the convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Speaking at the opening of the UN General Assembly Tuesday here in New York, President Trump blasted the United Nations, saying it's, quote, not even coming close to living up to its potential, unquote. Meanwhile, Trump claimed he himself has ended 7 wars.
A period of just 7 months, I have ended 7 unendable wars. They said they were unendable. Very honored to have done it. It's too bad that I had to do these things instead of the United Nations doing them. And sadly, in all cases, the United Nations did not even try to help in any of them.
Trump also called climate change a con job and warned European nations of the, quote, double-tailed monster of migration and green energy.
When your prisons are filled with so-called asylum seekers who repaid kindness, and that's what they did, they repaid kindness with crime, it's time to end the failed experiment of open borders. You have to end it now. Let's see, I can tell you. I'm really good at this stuff. Your countries are going to hell.
Meanwhile, anti-war protesters gathered outside the United Nations, urging an end to Israel's war on Gaza, coming as at least 10 countries recognized Palestinian statehood this week, bringing the number of countries at the United Nations who've recognized the country of Palestine to about 150. For more, we're joined by journalist Ishan Tharoor. He is global affairs columnist at The Washington Post, where his latest columns are headlined, Trump versus Lula was a window into MAGA at the UN, and a Trump-shaped wrecking ball swings toward a faltering United Nations. Welcome back to Democracy Now!, Ishan. It's great to have you with us. Why don't you comment overall on President Trump's address yesterday?
Sure. Well, it's a pleasure to be back with you, Amy. I've covered every single one of Trump's UN speeches from his first term into now. And I think it's fair to say, in his first term, he was a bit of an object of curiosity, his appearances on the UN. You remember many moments of levity, of the audience laughing or laughing at him, sometimes with him. And I think there was an overarching impression among the UN diplomatic corps that this is an aberration, perhaps. This is a particular interlude in American politics. And now with Trump's return this year, it's very clear that he represents a certain status quo, or an emerging status quo. And in Trump's speech, as you highlighted, the two very coherent points he made was about the perils of immigration and the mistake in his mind of green climate policies. And he's speaking not just to his base, but to an emerging far-right base across the West. He warned about the death of Western Europe. And this is all highly unusual rhetoric to have from the dais of the General Assembly, where you're supposed to be, as the largest underwriter of the United Nations, as a prominent member of state, talking about the ways in which, you know, global cooperation can solve major global challenges. But that is not something Trump cares about. And it became abundantly clear, especially as his speech went on and on and on and on, four times beyond the allotted time for him.
Over an hour. It's generally about 15 minutes.
It's generally 15 minutes, correct. Trump was, speaking to a far-right international around the world more than he was to the member states there in the room.
And Ishan, you mentioned this, I think it was the longest speech ever, UN speech by the American president. And it almost seemed at times the narcissism and the lecturing of world leaders. What do you think was the impact on them, especially when he talks about migration as it's primarily a European problem, when the reality is that many countries in the global south, Iran, Turkey, Colombia, are hosting huge numbers of refugees and migrants as well.
That's right. You know, the length of the speech was something that an Arab diplomat texted me during the speech saying, this reminds me of Gaddafi more than anybody else at the United Nations. Of course, the late Libyan dictator was somebody who came to the UN and spent a lot of time kind of amusing the audience and going on and on and on. And Trump, yes, he had his usual moments where, you know, he's talking about a faulty teleprompter and the escalator that didn't work, and then you know, offering some strange asides here and there, but absolutely he came to the United Nations, a forum that's supposed to, in its function, grapple with problems that all countries share or that cross borders. And here he is talking about how to shut down borders. Here he is talking about the waste of time of the United Nations and reviving in many ways long-standing Republican complaints about the UN that predate Donald Trump, but which, you know, Donald Trump has really accelerated a certain conversation in the United States about the U.S.'s commitments to this institution, about the U.S.'s commitments in general to the general ethos and principles of multilateralism, which is what the UN stands for. And so it's kind of accelerated us, the sense of an inflection point now. The UN is 80 years old. It's fair to say that it's showing its age. It's not been able to resolve conflicts for a long time. It's struggling to maintain the peace. It's struggling in many ways to fulfill some of its core mission and goals. The U.S. cuts that Trump has initiated to USAID and other programs are deeply damaging to the U.N. system and the international humanitarian system as well. And so you're seeing a very beleaguered U.N. Secretary General Antonio Guterres entering his final year. And while he may want to sort of position the U.N. for a future where it has to reckon with climate change, where it has to figure out the rules of the road internationally for things like AI and other advanced technologies, instead of, you know, positioning the UN for the future, he's in the midst of a really brutal regime of austerity and retrenchment and major cuts to come next year.
And what about this claim of Donald Trump that he ended seven unendable wars that the United Nations was unwilling to get involved with? Could you fact check that for us a little bit?
Right. I mean, I think you can go through each seven of them, and forgive me, I don't have them all itemized in my head at this point, but my colleagues at the Washington Post have already fact-checked them. I think it's fair to say that in all seven instances that he cited, either there was no actual war to be resolved, or the war is still raging. You know, he talked about this peace deal that was brokered between the DRC and Rwanda, which is backing rebels in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. Just yesterday, you had the president of the DRC here in New York saying, actually, the fighting is worse than it's ever been right now. The conflict between India and Pakistan, the Pakistanis recognized that telling Trump that he stopped the conflict was great for them because that's all he wanted to hear. But the Indians have a totally different narrative, and it has nothing to do with Trump seizing hostilities. And the list goes on. What's curious, though, is in the past, in his first term, when he would tout his achievements, that would often elicit, you know, audible laughter in the room of the General Assembly. This year, when he is patting himself on the back, declaring, you know, and basically saying, look, I'm the great peacemaker. Nothing is, you know, I'm the great, you know, builder of the American economy. No one's, you know, and speaking in his customary superlatives, there was pin drop silence. And that's partially because some of those leaders in this room have felt compelled to endorse him for the Nobel Peace Prize, who have felt compelled to kind of get with the program as authored by Washington.
Sean, I wanted to go to the scene in the room. You wrote, a senior foreign diplomat posted at the UN texts me, this man is stark raving mad. Do Americans not see how embarrassing this is? There was a problem with the teleprompter for President Trump. And White House Press Secretary Carolyn Leavitt told Fox News' Jesse Waters that it looked like sabotage and she would personally see to it that there would be accountability. And Senator Mike Lee, the Republican from Utah, called for defunding the UN for, quote, orchestrating escalator and teleprompter malfunctions. Because we should say before the teleprompter malfunction, he had to read from his script before it went back on. As he and Melania Trump went up the escalator, it stopped. But it turned out, according to a UN official, that someone from the president's party who ran ahead of him inadvertently triggered the stop mechanism on the escalator. Talk about those two moments.
Right. Well, I mean, you mentioned Senator Mike Lee. Senator Mike Lee has already put forward legislation earlier this year to fully defund the United Nations and to pull the U.S. out of the U.N. So the fact that he's seizing on this episode to justify his longstanding, you know, to grind his axe is funny.
I wonder if he's also calling for defunding the White House, because according to the UN, the White House was operating Trump's teleprompter.
Exactly. Yeah. So it appears that the teleprompter that Trump complained about on the world stage at the dais of the General Assembly was operated by the White House and was malfunctioning probably because of some error within his team. You heard the president of the General Assembly, Annalena Baerbock, say immediately afterwards that because of a lot of queries we're getting from delegations, we can confirm that there's nothing wrong with the teleprompter. It's working perfectly. And that was a discreet but very clear moment. And it didn't seem thereafter that any of the world leaders who spoke after Trump had any issues there either. Yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, on the 80th anniversary of the United Nations, again, a body that the United States was a prime mover of creating, and is still providing a significant percentage, the biggest percentage of the collective UN budget. What does this attitude of the Trump administration mean for that world body?
Well, the Trump administration's view is that the UN is too big and does too much, and its functions should be pared down to focus more exclusively on solving conflict. That's their general premise of how they approach the UN. They have a lot of particular bees in their bonnet about wings of the UN system. They've pulled the US out of the WHO, the UNESCO, the UN's cultural agency. They have they see whole aspects of the UN system as kind of irredeemably biased, anti-Israel, and I think this is not new. This has been a long-standing U.S. suspicion and complaint. Reagan pulled the U.S. out of UNESCO in the 80s, but successive U.S. administrations have long understood that the UN is a value add for American power. It's a platform for the U.S. to meet the world, for the U.S. to be present at every conversation. It matters for America, for an idea of American power, that the U.S. is the kind of guarantor of the UN. But that no longer is the view, the abiding view among Republicans. And there's a, in general, and this is in keeping with Trump's own political style and foreign policy worldview. There's a suspicion of having to operate in these kinds of institutions in the first place. He prefers transactional bilateral deal making. The UN is not about that kind of deal making. The UN is a multilateral forum. And so there's a kind of clash between the MAGA worldview and the whole ethos of the UN, and it's almost irreconcilable.
The big news of the week is France, Portugal, Britain, Australia joining somewhere near 150 other countries, member states of the UN, in recognizing the state, the country of Palestine. Trump repeated his criticism of their action.
Some of this body is seeking to unilaterally recognize a Palestinian state, the rewards would be too great for Hamas terrorists for their atrocities. This could have been solved so long ago. But instead of giving in to Hamas's ransom demands, those who want peace should be united with one message: release the hostages now. Just release the hostages now.
The United States now becomes the only member of the UN Security Council not to recognize the state of Palestine. The significance of what Trump said.
It's hugely significant in that, I mean, we've seen over the course of this hideous conflict, the U.S.'s isolation, and U.S. and Israel's isolation deepening on the world stage. You've seen all these governments, especially now in Western Europe, recognizing that no one's under the illusion that making this move creates a Palestinian state, but it shows a level of political commitment to the Palestinians that many believe is necessary, and it's a reminder to Israel that what Israel is doing won't be ignored, and the extent to which Israel is basically destroying the conditions for a Palestinian state, in the minds of a lot of European diplomats that I've spoken to, there has to be some kind of consequence to it. Now, I think you could turn around and say the fact that the U.S. has blocked Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas from even coming to the U.N. this year, that it sort of just scoffs at these kinds of moves. It does also illustrate a bit of the weakness of the U.N. system, that you have a veto-wielding Security Council member just standing in the middle, standing in the way of any kind of political progress at the U.N. on this issue. And it shows, to a certain extent, the fact that, you know, for all our discussions of a post-American world or the decline of American power, if the U.S. wants to position itself in an antagonistic way, it still will be effective.
I want to end where the UN General Assembly began, as it does every year, with Brazil. In Trump's UN address, he said he interacted briefly with the Brazilian president.